Hey, just a little bit of a cold opening here. I just wanted to hop in and apologize for the sound quality on this first episode. This is our first time ever recording a podcast, and we were basically just using regular headphones. So about halfway through, there is quite a bit of background noise, but we did figure it out for the second episode. So we're not going to have this just a one-time deal. So just stick with us on this one. And going forward, we'll have that figured out. Thank you very much and enjoy the episode.
Hello, and welcome to Knights of the Hardcover, a new podcast dedicated to discussing and summarizing fantasy books, their lore, and all the things that we absolutely love about them. My name is Brandon Castle. I'm here to lead you across the Isbun Bridge to the battle fame you've always dreamt of. Joining me here is the Tainted Blood Sworn that never turn off their thought cages. We have Chris Lauer, the Cruel.
Woo, what an intro. I love it. I'm excited. Let's go.
And our Jarl of hot takes, Zach Meissig.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here.
All right, I'm going to need those hot takes today because this is our first episode. We're so happy that you can join us. If you did not pick up from that intro, today we are discussing the 2021 Norse-inspired fantasy epic, Shadow of the Gods. The sequel of this book, Hunger of the Gods, was just dropped in April this year. So if you're like us and needed a reminder and couldn't find it anywhere, we're here to do that for you. So give us some grace as we work through this because we are not experts in Norse mythology and we have no idea how to pronounce the names in the places of this book. So we're going to get a lot of those wrong. We apologize to our Nordic community listening today, but we will do our best to work through these. So on that note, let's get moving here. Just going to start with a little introductory about the lore and kind of just some of the overarching ideas of the book. So Shadow of the Gods follows three main characters, Orca, Varg, and Elvar. Each one of them has a first-person view of the storyline, so they each have their own individual chapter. We'll cover each one of them separately. But it covers those three as they traverse the lands of Vigrio, the battle plane of the warring and now extinct gods. The gods in the book include Snaka, who is the snake god, Berser, the god of the berserker or the bear, Likrafa, the dragon god, Ulfur, the wolf god, Orna, the eagle god, Hunder and a few, and Rada, the rat god. There's several others, but those are kind of the main ones. All the gods are expected to be dead, aside from myths about the dragon god Likrifa, who is still alive, trapped in a prison below Escutrio, the battlefield.
Ascutro.
Okay, sorry. Once again, this is going to happen a lot, so stick with us here. So he's trapped in the prison below that battlefield. The prison's called Vergilmir, which is kind of like the heaven within Vigrio. Snaka, who I said was the snake god, he was known as kind of the biggest god, considered the father of all gods, and was killed by his children in a great battle, causing the world to be shattered. During that shattering, the god's bones and equipment were tossed across the world and are used to this day for the power they still contain. For instance, Ulfur, the wolf god, his chain that used to contain him, it exploded across the world. It's used for like slave collars now and pieces of swords and things like that to make them more powerful and indestructible. Also during that shattering, demon-like creatures called Vesa were released in the world, tormenting its people and can only be warded with runes or Froa spirits, which are spirits of the ash tree. The last living remnants of the gods today are called the Tainted, which are human descendants of the gods that have special abilities and powers tied to one of those gods specifically. The Tainted are seen as evil reminders of the god and are hunted by people all across the world, aside from the Dragon Tainted, which are thought to be dead because Orna, the eagle god, and Ulfur, the wolf god, when Likrifa was imprisoned, they killed all of his children as revenge for killing their child. So now the world is in disarray with queens and jarls fighting for power, using their thralls, their seer witches, which are people naturally able to use magic, galdermen, which are people that studied how to use magic, and tainted. So they're using all of those people to gain power over each other and cause these great wars. And everyone in the end is just trying to find battle fames, trying to find some of these remnants of the gods and expand their kind of territories as much as possible. So that's a general overview. That's really short-sighted for how much information is in this about the lore and the gods, but that's a good kicking off point. Anything to add, Zach, Chris, there?
No, I think you did an amazing job. It's going to be very hard to follow.
I think you did a great job. I think one thing that's important to note is the Boneback Mountains. I think the Boneback Mountains, they're a pretty big deal in the story. And I think that's like one of the coolest parts of lore here is that Snaka, the snake father of all the gods, when he was killed, he was so big that he died. And as he died, his bones essentially decayed and they became a giant mountain range. And there's actually an entire city built in his head, which I think is really interesting and just like a really fascinating piece of lore. So just to throw that in there.
Honestly, yeah, we'll get to it later, but one of the highlights of the book was really coming up to the city in Snaka's head was one of the coolest descriptions of the book. So, yeah, stuff like that really gives you context for how big the gods really were during their peak power. So, good addition there. And like I said, we're going to start with just a brief synopsis of each of the character storylines, give you some reminders of what happened with them, because this was a really dense book, and it's hard to keep all that in your thought cage, as they say. We're going to start with Orca, then we'll go to Varg and Elvar. Each one of us is kind of just going to take one of those sections. We're going to start off with Orca here, and Zach's going to lead us on that journey.
Awesome. Thank you, Brandon. All right, so we started with Orca. So we start with her and her husband, Thorkell, and their son Brekka, and they're hunting kind of near their home when they kind of hear some screaming going on. And when they go to investigate, they find out that one of their neighbors have been killed and their son has been taken. They bring this kind of news and the dead bodies to the fishing village of Fjör. I think that's how they pronounce it.
Fjör.
Okay. Like that. kind of while they're in town, they learn that they're Jarl Sigrun, and Jarl is kind of like the mayor of the town. Is that how you guys would describe?
I would almost say like a mixture between a sheriff and like some sort of county official, you know, just it's not quite sheriff because it's like a mayor. It's not quite as big as a governor, but I would say maybe a little bit bigger than a mayor.
And just to clarify here, it's Jarl. I've been saying Jarl, Jarl. For the last
year. Jarl, yeah. Yeah.
It's like
Jarl.
All right, great. Jarl. I'm an idiot.
Jarl.
Perfect.
Yeah. Sigrun. Jarl Sigrun.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so she was summoned to Queen Helka's court. We then kind of later on find out that the queen wants the Jarl to pledge her lands to her court since there has been some raids going on across the country, and it's been kind of more of like a scarier time. The village is not too happy about this news. And one of the townsmen, Verk, actually insults the Jarl's nephew, which kind of causes a duel to happen between the two of them. Verk ends up being killed by one of the Jarl's draggers, and a dragger is kind of an oath sworn like warrior of theirs. During this battle, Orca notices that the dragger actually got some of her husband's blood on the dragger, and then the dragger actually ends up like licking the blood off of it. And we learn later on how significant this is. I don't know if we want to address why it is important right now or later.
We figure out soon enough, so yeah, might as well just knock it out.
Cool. So we find out that Thorkell is blood tainted. And do you guys know which blood or which god he's a descendant of?
I think he's Berserkir.
Berserkir. Okay.
His brother is Berserkir, so I would assume that he was also Berserkir.
Okay. So that's like a big deal because the blood tainted are kind of hunted in parts of the world. So this kind of makes Orca feel kind of uneasy about this. And then also kind of to, they go back home and kind of while they're at home, and I think this happens probably a little bit before this, Burka does sneak out in the middle of the night to save a tenor named Vesil. And Orca is not happy about that because tenor, they're like spawns of one of the gods, right? Kind of like a creature.
They're basically demon creatures. So I think
they broke out of hell essentially when the shattering happened. So mm-hmm. Yeah, demons is the best way to say it.
Okay.
It's and Vesely, a tenor, it's like a bat looking thing.
That eats your teeth. The worst. Eats your teeth. The worst Love character. Teeth. Oh my fuck tenor. Every time they bring him up, I'm like, I'm gonna cringe right here.
So creepy.
Yeah.
So anyway, kind of after that battle, since Orca is so uneasy about everything, she does try to seek out guidance from the Ash Tree Spirit to kind of figure out what kind of the family's next move should be. Should they kind of stay in place or should they leave? Once she gets to the Ash Tree, she notices that it's destroyed, which causes Orca to kind of race back home to back to her family. But she notices that her house is actually destroyed. And when she runs around, she can't find Burka anywhere, and she finds Thorkell that's like moments from dying. Once Thorkell actually does pass, Orca tries to chase down the kidnappers, but she kind of loses them because the river forks off and she's not quite sure which direction she needs to go to.
One thing I want to toss in here is the reason she's so freaked out is because the very beginning of the book, they go to another farm and they find like one of the kids was missing. When they go to this big meeting of everyone, they find out that like several kids are missing in the area. So there's obviously something weird going on. So when her kid's missing too, there's obviously something nefarious happening here. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, tons of missing kids.
Also, after Thorkell dies, she says, "I am blood, I am death, I am vengeance." And I was like, that's some serious Batman vibes we got going on here from Orca.
Orca is probably one of the most gruesome characters, point of view characters I've ever read. Just the shit that she does is outrageous.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Keep on doing that. Because also, too, before she chases them, doesn't she dig up kind of her old battle gear too?
Yeah, definitely. We like know that she's a seasoned veteran on the war or the battlefield. She has a whole kit and everything she needs. And something else interesting too is before when she was investigating their land, like there is just claw marks and everything. So obviously Thorkell had turned into something else before he died. It was evident of that, but we don't know what at the time. So.
All right, so at this point, Orca returns to town where she finds Burke's kids. Burke's was the guy who died in the battle. The kids try to avenge him, but they fail. So she finds them tied up. She then like frees them. In exchange, they take her on their boats kind of up the river to save her some time. And she kind of promises that she will teach them how to fight so they have like a better chance of avenging their father. She was able to track down someone who was working for the head guy and kind of like gruesomely torture him to death to give up the name of Drekka. It seems like Drekka is the one who's in charge of this operation of kidnapping all these kids.
One thing about Orca is she is not afraid to torture a motherfucker. That is for sure. I mean, the ends justify the means for Orca. That's a very important character point for her.
she doesn't even care about the means. Well, I mean, she does care about the means, but she
every now and then she feels bad about it, kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A very soft kind of.
Yeah.
All right. At this point here, Orca does kind of ditch the boys behind because they brought her to the location that she wanted them to like, drop her off at. But Okra is then kind of overwhelmed when she's attacking, and the boys come back and they do save her at this point, like regroup. And this is kind of when my memory gets kind of fuzzy because they regroup, but don't they run into like a big spider's web with a bunch of the frost spiders here. They run into like a giant crow. And Orca kind of goes out of her way to save this giant crow.
I think an important part of that was just to point out earlier, you talked about Queen Helka trying to take over the whole territory. One of her sons, Hakon, is known to be, through Orca's destructive tear through all these people, she finds out that Hakon is actually part of this group that's taking these children. That name's been floated around. He's hanging out with Drekker, so we know he's up to no good. And so that's an important thing, because Queen Helka, I think, is going to become a bigger part of this story in the future here. And also, she finds a Brekka's toy sword in that fight, too. So she knows that Brekka is still alive. She knows she's on the right trail. She's going in the right direction. She just doesn't know exactly who's doing it.
Yes.
And while they're battling these spiders, one of the kids that's with her is bitten by the spider, and their blood starts to freeze. And then he ends up dying from this wound. Is that right, Brandon?
No, he lives through it. Mord actually is the one that, a couple minutes.
The other one dies.
Yeah.
Because the Jarl, the nephew comes, because the Jarl's been tracking them, right, throughout this point. And because of this, he's able to flag them down with his crew. Does that sound right?
Yeah, the Jarl's tracking him because Orca took an axe to her face, and so Orca thought she was dead. Turns out she's still alive and has been sending people after Orca. And one of those people was her nephew, Govar, something like that. And so they run into him at this point. And then it's a different storyline, but Skalk and all of Helka's men are also with them too. We'll talk about Skalk in a different section here, but so definitely Helka's involvement is very pronounced here.
So there's this battle here, and then that crow that they save comes to kind of save the day. That crow goes back to their stead, and it warns Vesli. Was that the name of the son's?
Vesli is the name of the son's tenor. I can't remember the name of Orca's.
Spurt.
Yes. Orca has a little demon pet of her own, Spurt, who's been protecting her for a lot of her life. And the crow brings Spurt and Vesli in to help them. Yeah.
And then during this moment, too, Orca kind of goes berserk, too, and starts killing a whole bunch of people. It seems like Orca herself is also blood tainted, that she has some sort of powers too, but she ends up kind of going crazy and here towards the end.
Yeah, when people don't know they're tainted, they kind of get like a red mist, or they have aggressive actions they don't know about. And to her, she just kind of blacks out, and all of a sudden everyone's dead. So that's like her superpower is blacking out and everyone dies. So
yeah, kind of like in Moon Knight when that one guy takes over Mark's body.
exactly like that.
All right. Yeah, that kind of wraps up her story. She does meet someone at the very end, but I think we're gonna save that for
this next section here in mine.
All right.
Yeah, I can go over Varg. So I think he's actually the second POV character that shows up. And he's a younger guy. I want to say, what would you guys picture Varg as? Maybe 20, 25, something like that.
I think at some point they say he's like 27,
27,
or something around there. In my head, I always envisioned him as like 16, but then I read that. I was like, oh yeah, he's older a little bit, but yeah, he's young.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But he's like a younger guy, and when it first picks up, he's definitely lost, and he's very sad about his sister who has died. We're not exactly sure how she died, but there's also a lot of flashbacks you get with Varg. And basically his backstory is that he was a slave, him and his sister were slaves, and she died somehow, and he killed his master and escaped. So you basically pick up where Varg is on the run, and he's looking for Sephiwich or a Goldeman. And the reason he wants to find them is because they can do magic, and they can perform what's called a call, which will show you the last minutes of somebody's life. So that's what he wants. He wants to see the last minutes of his sister's life, because he swore that he would avenge her and kill whoever killed her. And so while he's on the hunt for a Sephiwich, he comes across, I don't remember, you guys remember what village or town he stumbles into at the beginning?
I don't know what that was.
Yeah, I don't remember. Well, Zach's looking for that. Basically, he goes into this village and that he finds the Bloodsworn. The Bloodsworn, it's basically a mercenary group of fighters who are famous across the land for their battle fame. And they're basically holding tryouts. They lost a member in whatever last skirmish they were in, so they needed to fill that hole. And they were doing the tryouts are basically you fight Einar the half troll, they call him, just a massive dude. And you basically fight him, and they say, hey, if you beat Einar, you know, you can join the Bloodsworn. So the Bloodsworn have a Sephiwitch. Varg sees that, so he says, all right, I am going to fight this half troll and try to join the Bloodsworn so I can do my call with this Sephiwitch. He fights Einar and basically gets his ass kicked, except he gets really, really mad and he bites Einar's leg. And he bites his leg so hard that he bites through the leather of his shoe into the skin of this guy. And Einar's so mad. Foreshadowing. Einar basically bonks him on the head because he's really mad. And Varg passes out. When he wakes up, he essentially finds out that he became a Bloodsworn. They liked his grit or something like that, they tell him.
Not yet. He's still an introductory member, but they'll bring him on. He's not part of the Bloodsworn yet.
Right. But they kind of take him under his wing. You're like, you're an intern now. Unpaid, but you're an intern. And Einar's a bit mad at him, but he basically gets over it. And then at this point, somewhere along the line, Varg's old slaver's son shows up, and he's pretty mad because Varg killed his dad. And he says, I'm going to take you back with me, and you're going to be my slave. You're a slave. I don't know why you thought you could get away. The Bloodsworn save him, and they kill that slaver's son, I believe. So he's not a problem anymore, and Varg goes off with the Bloodsworn. While he's with the Bloodsworn, he makes a good friend, Torvik. He is another unpaid intern with the Bloodsworn who wants to join their crew. And they bond throughout the book. Good buddies. And then as the Bloodsworn are doing their travels, they meet up with somebody named Prince Yaromir. He kind of shows up quite dramatically, if I remember. Do you guys remember the exact circumstances of how Prince Yaromir showed up?
They were having a ball or a drinking party, long tables, everyone has ale. And Jaromir basically kicks down the door with a bunch of guys him and whatever the leader, Glornir, have a little bit of a relationship. They know each other, but he's clearly not happy.
Gotcha. Yeah. He's looking for somebody, and the person that he's looking for is Bloodsworn. So Prince Yaromir basically threatens Glormir, who's the leader of the Bloodsworn, and the rest of the Bloodsworn. He says, you better hand this guy over or else. And Glormir said, we're the Bloodsworn. He's a Bloodsworn. You're not taking him. That's it. Yada, yada, yada. They come to blows, and Prince Yaromir and his men, and the Bloodstorm, they start fighting. But before it could really get hot and heavy, I don't think anybody really died at this point.
Did they fight in the first one? Because they had two kind of interactions. Was this the first one?
You're right.
There was a little break where Varg gets all of his equipment and levels up and designs his character and does all of that.
Yep. You're right.
Yeah.
First, Prince Yaromir threatens them and he says, I'm going to come back tomorrow and you better hand this guy over tomorrow. And they don't. And then you're right. Varg levels up, as you say. Then they have a little fight. But while they're fighting, Queen Helka shows up, who Zach talked about a little bit. She actually shows up in person. So she's not just this ghost that we talk about. She's there. The fight stops. And she basically conscripts the Bloodsworn to help her fight a threat. She says that her people are dying mysteriously and she needs them to help figure out what's going on, which they agree to do. Do we know why? I think, if I remember right, Queen Helka and Glormir, the leader of the Bloodsworn, kind of go off on their own, and Glormir says, look, we're going to help her.
She offers a chest full of silver, I believe, is what they're going for. Also, gotcha. During that fight with Jaromir's men, Varg makes a complete ass of himself, which is pretty funny. But he gets his first kill and gets like up in his armor and stuff, and so that's okay. exciting too. But
gotcha.
Side point.
Yeah. So they go off. They go do this mission with the queen's men. The queen essentially assigns them what I would like to call a babysitter. His name is Skulk, and I believe he is a gold man. And yes. So this kind of brings back Varg's like, oh, wait, oh, I almost forgot. I'm looking for a Sepulwich. I'm looking for a Goldeman. I want to do this a call. I need to see how my sister died. The entire time you're reading Varg, pretty much every chapter, he's like, oh, my sister. Got to avenge my sister. So just keep that in mind. But while they're doing the queen's bidding, they find a bunch of mutilated queen's men. And they pretty much realize that the reason they're on this mission is because they're the queen's last hope. And she sent a lot of other people and they keep dying. So they know that this is a pretty dire situation. So it just kind of raises the stakes a little bit. While they're around that area, they see some people over there and they basically just get into a big fight with these people. They realize right away that they're not on the same side. And Varg ends up fighting a dragonborn, which is one of Leek Rifa's children. And if you remember from Brandon's intro, the dragonborn aren't supposed to be around. They're supposed to be a myth. There's not supposed to be any dragonborn. There's Berserkir. There's like the children of the hound god, children of the wolf god and all this, but the dragonborn aren't supposed to be a thing. So it was significant when Varg fights a dragonborn and he wins that fight, but he also gets stabbed with this bone sword. One of these, I think it's one of the wolf's teeth or something like that.
I think it was the talon of the eagle god. I think the Ornir,
talon of the eagle
I think
god.
It was a talon. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. It was a tough fight, but Varg wins, and I don't remember if he passes out after this or what happened.
The cut from it is just so severe. I think he goes into he passes out or goes like a coma or something like that. But yeah, he's out for a couple days.
Gotcha. So, and then when he wakes up, he talks to Vol, and I don't think I explained this before, but Vol is the Sepulwich that was with the Bloodsworn, and he's trying to get this a call done. So Vol basically tells Varg, like, look, you proved yourself. You're like obviously a member of the crew, but you're not a member of the crew until Glornir says you are. And if Glornir says that you're a member of the crew, then I'll do this a call for you. Okay. I swear. Once Glornir's cool with it, I'll do it. And then Torvik says, hey man, I'll help you too. But surprise, Skulk is a bad guy. He betrays them.
What?
He kills Torvik, basically Varg's only friend ever, because he's been a slave his entire life, kills Torvik, and he's like, look, Varg, I'll do this a call for you. Just ditch your newfound friends and come with me. This is all you've ever wanted. Varg considers it, but he decides, no, fuck that, and fuck you. You killed my friend. I don't like that. Skulk basically kicks his ass, but he's also, injured at this time, and he takes Vol, the Sepulwich, away.
Something with that too, this is all going down in Rata, who's the rat god. It's going down in like his burial chamber or some kind of Rata chamber. I don't know what exactly it is, but it has all kinds of like god bones and like powerful objects in there. They open a closet and instead of brooms and mops, they find like dead god bones and like cool weapons and stuff. And when Skulk leaves, he takes all that shit with him too. So
yes, absolutely. Varg, a staple of Varg's story is passing out and then waking up again. Passes out after fights a lot and then wakes up and things have changed. So again, he has passed out after getting his butt kicked by Skulk. And when he wakes up, a lot of the Bloodsworn around him, they're like, oh my gosh, are you okay? And there's this loud pounding at the door. And it turns out that Glornir is pounding at the door and he's furious because... another surprise, Vol and Glornir were actually married. And so his wife essentially got taken and Glornir's pissed. But Varg thinks, man, he's like really pounding on that door. Like, I know Glornir's strong, but like, Jesus Christ, like Einar. And they tell him, well, that's because Glornir is Berserkir. Glornir is tainted. And Varg is shocked. He's like, wow, really? And then they're like, yeah, actually, we're all tainted. Surprise, so are you, Varg. You are also tainted. And that's how he was able to hold his own against the Dragonborn. That's how he was able to bite a hole out of Einar's foot. Because the whole time he has been tainted, and it takes Varg a while to be okay with this, but he eventually gets okay with it. And the Bloodsworn are like, all right, time to go get Vol. And they leave and they run into essentially a massacre, just this huge massacre, a bunch of dead people everywhere, and a really bloody woman kind of sitting in the middle of it, and a bunch of children, unharmed children, are around her. And it's very fun to see from his point of view that that scary, bloody woman is Orca. She just got done killing everybody in that room that Zach was talking about. And it turns out that Orca's dead husband is actually Glornir's brother. And Orca used to be in the Bloodsworn. So, yeah, nice little family reunion here. And
Orca,
that's
it. Skull Splitter, motherfuckers.
Orca Skull Splitter.
I love that name. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. She is straight up Batman. I swear to God, at some point she will use like a grappling claw or something. Everything she said, I am vengeance. She says it like four different times throughout this.
She's so badass.
Yeah, it's
she's
incredible.
So badass.
Cool. Great summary, Chris. So that's the two characters there. Their story is really tied together. Now for Elvar, which I guess I would consider probably like the story driver of all this. Orca gives us a lot of the lore in the background. Varg gives us a really good story coming up, a redemption story, slave to warrior. And then Elvar is really where we see the actual story progressing forward. We see where Orca's kids are going and everything. But yeah, we'll get into that. So we come upon Elvar. She's rowing a boat. It's the Wave Jarl. She's part of a group called the Battle Grim. Similar to the Bloodsworn, Battlegrim is a bunch of people that get together and they go hunt down Vaesin, they hunt down Tainted. It's a little bit different than the Bloodsworn. Bloodsworn are take conscriptions from like kings to go protect their lands. These people are specifically looking for Vaesin and Tainted, four kings and Jarls as well, but that's like their only job. And everyone is doing that to gain battle fame, just like the Bloodsworn. They have something called a Hunter Thrall, which is basically like a human bloodhound. A thrall means slave, so it's just hunt, and Hunter is the dog god, I think, or something like that. So this
he's just a tainted descendant of the dog god.
Yeah, and so they're just really good at hunting people down. That's what they use them for. And we come on them. They're trying to capture a tainted man. The reason they're hunting this tainted man is they were signed by that by a Jarl. They come across a woman, a child, and a man fighting a troll in that search for the tainted man. The battle grim all start fighting the troll. It's a very bloody battle. We see the woman throw a tablet into the lake that they're at, and it's not just a normal lake, it's a lake of molten fire. And so she's clearly which I had to read like three or four times, but what is this again? But yeah, it's a molten fire lake.
Well, here, let me stop you for a second, because I want to mention something that really hit me on reread on Elvar's chapter, is that the Bloodsworn show up to this village and they basically the Battlegrim show up to this village and they basically say, we know there's a tainted here. Give us the tainted or we're going to kill you all and we're going to find the tainted anyway. And so it's a very sympathetic point of view from Elvar, but when you really get down to it, they killed people in this village so that they could find this tainted man, you know? And that really hit me on reread, that these aren't necessarily the good guys.
Yeah. And at this point they were like, oh, you guys are trying to protect the tainted or something, but you know, mm-hmm. they have no problem cutting down everyone to get to their objective here. So the woman throws the tablet into the molten lake. The man that's there, he starts attacking all of them. He proves to be a tainted. He's a berserker, and Agnar is essentially the sea witch that they have with them. Or no, Agnar is the leader. Excuse me. Agnar is the leader of the battle grim. He basically stills him with a word that's like an ancient word that he uses to still the berserker. And so he stills this berserker with one word. They fight the whole troll thing. They kill the troll. Then they go talk to the berserker. He stills him with a word and basically like calms him down. They capture him. And then as they're leaving, this giant serpent called a Sarvorm, something along those lines, attacks their boat as they're about to leave, attacks the wave Jarl. And the woman that's on the boat that they just captured, that was throwing the tablet, she starts fighting with this giant serpent to save her son. And it turns out that she's a seer witch, and seer witches have Snaka blood in them. And so that's why she's able to fight this serpent. And so they still down the serpent, they take him down. Everyone's like, holy shit, she's powerful. And they continue on their way. They find a place to stop. Where they stop, they get attacked by these disgusting things called nightworms. And there's a thousand of these things on the ground. They're covering everyone. They're huge. They're going up noses. They're going up butts. They're killing people. Like, it's a terrifying, terrifying scene. And so this was at an oath stone, which is basically just like a glowing stone that's in the ground. They don't know what that is, but it's from the time of the gods. So they get attacked by these nightworms. They're all like, this is the worst fucking thing ever. We're going to have to get out of here. We got to go to Snakavik. Snakavik is the city that we talked about earlier, where it's the city inside of Snaka's skull. So it has a lot of protections from Vaisen. It has a lot of powers. They're just so like, cool. We need to get away from the nightworms. Let's go to this city. So we have
protection. Vaisa don't go in to the city because it's inside the skull. We don't necessarily know why Vaisa will not venture inside of the bones of the gods, but that's a big lore thing. The Vaisa and the bones of the gods are like, there's something there. There's a connection there.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah. And so the reason that they're going to Snakavik, besides to get away from the Vaisen and the Nightworms, is because they have this berserker that they're going to be like, we're going to give to this, the Jarl of Snakavik. He pays the best, so this will be great. We get some hesitation from Elvar about going back. We don't really know why, but when they arrive at the docks, we are introduced to this character group similar to the Battle Grimm and the Bloodsworn. This is the Raven Feeders, led by Ilska the Cruel. And so these Raven Feeders are fearsome warriors. They're known all across the world by how disgustingly gruesome they are in their battles. They take no man hostage, that kind of thing. So they see them. They're all like, we got to stay away from them. And then they go to the Jarl Stor. He is the Jarl of the Snakavik, and they're going to hand over a barrack to him. Behind Jarl Stor is this weird marble head called Hrung that can tell if blood is tainted. He's a giant's head that was removed from the giant's body in that battle that we were talking about between the gods. But the head still works. It's able to determine if people are tainted or not. So they use that to determine that Beric, the berserker, is actually a berserker, and he's going to pay up big for him. Then, right after that, we find out that the Jarl is Elver's father, and that's why Elver was so hesitant to come back.
The giant calls her out.
Yeah, the giant's like, I smell something familiar, something I haven't smelt in a while, and he's like, oh, Elvar, you're back. And so that was a big reveal there. That's why she's so hesitant to come back. And then we meet Silrio, who is also one of the few Galdr women in the world. So there's Galdr men, there's Galdr women. She's able to use magic. And then she also has two brothers named Thorin and Brodir, who she's got a great relationship with Brodir. Thorin, not so much. So all of this goes back. They leave. They get their chest of gold. They leave there. They go back to their hotel. I think it was a Motel 6, I believe. and there, her brothers meet her there with Jarl Stor and give Elvar the opportunity to lead her own war band if she returns to Snakavik. Leaves the
Pretty
blood.
Good deal.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal. It's essentially what she's always wanted. The reason she left in the first place was because the Jarl tried to marry her off to the queen's son, who we saw earlier. I think his name was Hakon. She was promised to him, and she didn't want that. She didn't want that life. She left. She got out of there. But now they're saying, if you come back, we'll just give you what you wanted. You'd be a warrior again. So she goes back. They leave. She says no. She says, fuck off. I'm not interested. She goes back to the castle. She sneaks in to Jarl Stor's castle. She talks to Hrung, They apparently had a really good relationship. She gets him drunk because that's what she does when she needs something from him, is gets him fucked up a little bit.
She just liquors up a giant head.
Yeah, she just dumps a whole gallon of wine in his mouth. And we learn the history of Harong, how he came from Snack of Stomach, but was still living. A lot. I talked about that earlier. So she talks to him. She's like, what should I do? He basically gives her a riddle. And it's like, this is what's going to be important to you, is what's important, or is the decision that you should make. She goes back to the tavern they're staying at, that Motel 6. And there's a lot of fighting breaking out there. And it turns out that the Raven Feeders took that tainted boy. So the woman that was throwing the tablet into the lake and the man that was the berserker, they had that son with them. Turns out he's tainted too. Everyone's tainted in that family. It's a real strong tainted family.
Everyone's tainted, period.
Yeah, it turns out a lot more people are tainted than they led us to believe at the beginning. But the Raven Feeders take that boy and the woman that threw the tablet into the lake. Her name is Oopsa. And she said, they weren't here for him. They were here for us. I've been warning you about this for a while. Why didn't you listen? We knew this was going to happen. They were coming for both of us. And they're like, why is that? And she's like, I can't tell you that until we swear a blood oath. And it's called like a blood surreal. Okay, I'm not even going to try that because I sounded an idiot.
Yeah,
it's
a blood oath.
So she's like, if you guys swear this blood oath, I will tell you how to find Usk-trio, which is the battlefield. Oskatro, the battlefield that the gods had their battle on. It's known to have all kinds of unimaginable items, super powerful items. It's the place you want to go if you want to get your battle fame, which is what the Battle Grim wants. So she's like, if you spare a blood oath, I will take you there as long as you help me get my son back from the Raven Feeders. So
yeah, that's what the blood oath was, because she wanted them to go get her son right away. They said, well, who knows how long it's going to take to get your son. So she says, okay, I'll show you the way to Oskatrep first, but you have to swear a blood oath that after that, you have to find my son after that.
Yes, that's a good point. That's what the blood oath was centered around. And so they're all like, there's no freaking way you know where that's at. She's like, what do you think that tablet was I was destroying? It was essentially a tablet from the gods that has information that no one else knows. She was trying to destroy it so that no one can find that place ever. So you got to make this blood oath. If I help you get to this place and you don't help me get my son, all your blood's going to boil. It's literally going to boil inside your body and kill you. So that's where we stand. They make the blood oath. They're off to set away. Little side story here. There's a guy named Bjor in the Battle Grim. Bjor and Elvar have been close throughout, but Grend, who is essentially Elvar's protector sent by Jarl Seor, he's like, he's not good for you. You need to stay away from him. But ultimately, Elvar follows her heart. They end up kissing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They end up kissing and then fucking a lot. So much that Agnar is like, you guys need to cool it down a little bit. I can't sleep at night. But so Grind is telling him, you know, like, that's a bad idea. But they continue on anyways. Yada, yada, yada. Oopsa leads them to where they need to go. There's an invisible bridge called the Isbum Bridge. This is the Bridge of the Gods. It's an invisible bridge. No one's ever been able to find it before. They get attacked by some tenors, a lot of teeth grinding and nasty stuff that we'll skip over. But in that battle with the tenors, Elvar and Grend are saved by Bjor. And so Grend's like, okay, maybe he's not so bad. He might be a good guy after all.
And doesn't he show himself to be berserkier here?
Bjor, not yet, but he not did. Yet. He battled in a way that people were like, holy cow, he's strong as hell.
Okay.
Sweet spoiler for later, Chris.
Well, I thought he did show himself to be berserker here, but maybe it was later.
I think it's a little bit later after this. But then Grend gets very seriously injured in that, wakes up a little bit later. Elvar and Bjor fucking in the wagons and a lot after that. Elvar wants to get to know Bjor more. She wants to start a relationship with him, but he's super shady about his past. He won't tell her anything, and basically about his family or anything like that. And so she's just like, whatever, he's just a quiet guy. We'll just keep dating him because he's got that good dick. So finally, they reach Uskutrev. And they find that the ash tree there, that's supposed to be this really magical, powerful ash tree, has been burnt down, and it was burnt down in the last battle. But there's still this strange Froa spirit that's there with the ash tree. Her name is Vorn. And she's the guardian now after that ash tree was burnt down. So she's kind of like a half tree, half human being, half spirit. And she's very, very powerful with magic. They're all like, get out of the way. We got stuff to find. She ties a guy up in the trees and straps him to the ground. So she is not to be fucked with. She knows what she's doing. And then so once he straps down, they're like, okay, we'll leave you alone, but we're going to go look around at some stuff. They find the bones of Ulfur, the whole wolf god, is there. So they're like, holy cow, we're about to be rich. We're about to have songs sung about us. We're about to, you know, that's like 3 rings in a row in the NBA championships. Like, this is a big deal. We're about to be a big deal. To start loading up everything. And then all of a sudden, a band of people start entering Uskutrev. And they're like, who the hell could that possibly be? Turns out it's the Raven Feeders. So Vorn had told them a story about there's 3 sisters that are guarding Leekrafa. So there's like no way that these Raven Feeders could possibly get in and release the dragon. There's just no way that could ever happen. So just like keep them back. We'll be fine. Well, the Raven Feeders keep coming. Agner goes out to meet them. He offers a homanga, which is a duel one-on-one to settle this, and whoever wins that duel gets to take all the reward with them. They fight, and Agnar is kicking her ass, and he doesn't fight Ilska, he fights Ilska's brother, Skrid. So they fight, he's kicking his ass. Turns out he's a red-eyed black dragon too, or sorry, a tainted as well.
Tainted, and so, yeah. Dragonborn
tainted. But he kicks his ass regardless. And right as he's about to do the final blow, Bjor comes out of nowhere and stabs Agnar in the back and kills him. And everyone's like, that is crazy. What the hell? And so the Raven Feeders, they line up for battle. Battle Grim line up for battle. They have this thing called the Shield Wall. That's their big deal. And then as the Raven Feeders are lining up for battle, a wagon reveals it's full of changed children. So all those children that have been disappearing, all the children that have been gone throughout the story are in that thing, are in that wagon, and they know what they're going to do with the children. They're going to take them there and try to release Leekrafa with the children. So the fight continues, 2 groups going at each other. They're going back and forth. Vorn starts helping out because she's scared that they're going to release the dragon. Then the children, their eyes start glowing too. And it turns out that they are Dragonborn. Vorn tells everyone, like, those guys are all Dragonborn. Everyone in the Raven Feeders is a Dragonborn. We need to get the hell out of here or kill all of them. So Ilska sets Vorn on fire after that. And so she can't do anything more. 90 children get out of the wagons. They set them all around the tree. They all cut their hands, bleed onto the area where Leekrafa is supposed to be imprisoned. And out of the door comes those 3 women that are supposed to be guarding it. They take care of them really quickly, like way too good. For guardians of a god, they're weak.
well, they pop out and they're actually doing a pretty good job against Leekrafa for a little bit. They were hurting Leekrafa, and that's when the Raven Feeders were like, well, why don't we do something? Why don't we help out? And then that's when they took care of the 3
sisters. That's true.
Handily.
Leekrafa comes out first. Sorry, I missed that part. But Leekrafa comes out first, and they're fighting him, and they almost have her dead. And then, yeah, the Raven Feeders help out and start killing those sisters. So in the ash tree, there's a door. So they kill all of the guardians. Leekrafa comes out, turns into a human. Turns out the gods can both be human and dragon form. So she is this giant dragon, blocks out the sun, but she could also come into a human. And she wants to see her hall of Nashtrandir. And so that's her first request to Ilska. She's like, we got to leave. I got places. I got things to do. They head towards that. Raven Feeders follow them. That's the last we see of the Raven Peters in the book. And that's the end of Elver's story. So essentially, to wrap that up, Lick Rufa is free now. Her guardians or her defenders are dead, and the Raven Feeders are the army of the dragon now.
Yeah, and it's really a complete and total political shift, I think, in this world now. Now that Leek Roth is back, you know, it used to be that for the Battlegrim, their entire life has just been thrown on its head. Because they've been making a living after hunting the Tainted. But now, Leek Roth is here. And Leek Roth is a giant fucking dragon. And the Dragonborn are here. And so this is just a complete shift in power. The Tainted are going to be coming out from the woodworks. They're going to be powerful. People like the Bloodsworn are going to actually benefit from this. Because they're all tainted. And so they're kind of a part of this new world order, even though they're not. They're like kind of the good guys, whereas the Raven Feeders and Leek Roth, they're the bad guys. And the Battlegrim, they're probably going to have to answer for the fact that they've been hunting tainted for their entire lives. And people like the Raven Feeders are not going to like that. Leek Roth is not going to like that.
Yeah, and like clearly Queen Helka's son is involved in this. Possibly all of her men are involved in this. We don't know yet if she's actually involved in this because she sent the Bloodsworn up there to find out what's happening. So we don't know what her deal is, but definitely powerful people are involved with these Raven Feeders, and they're going to have some money and some backing behind them here.
And a giant dragon.
And a giant dragon, which, you know, never hurts. Also, all the other gods are dead, and they're the ones that got Lick Rufa into the prison in the first place. So,
are they dead?
Knows? Yeah, we saw some bones. Who knows?
Are they dead? You know, I feel the cover of the next book is a giant wolf. So, who knows?
I'm assuming they figure out some way to bring him back or something. But yeah, I'm excited to see how that happens. So that's the book. I got a little long in my section. Sorry, that was a dense section there, but
hey, that's all right.
Yeah, so that's the general idea of the book. What do you guys think overall? We read a lot of fantasy books. How does this compare? What do you think?
Why don't you go ahead, Zach?
I really liked it, especially for like the first book of the series. I thought he did like a really good job, kind of slowly introducing some of these concepts, but doing it in an exciting way. I never really felt like I was overwhelmed kind of by the lore or the plots. And none of us have read book two yet. But it did end in a way that I'm not quite sure how it'll work. I'm not quite sure if all the tainted will work together or there'll be different fractions based off the gods that they're descendants of. But no, I thought it worked really well too. And the nice thing about this book too that I liked, that I think more fantasy books should do, is that they have like a definition section at the end of the book. So yeah, all these like weird words or phrases, you can flip to the back and it'll tell you exactly what the words meant instead of having to read like multiple chapters to figure out what things meant. But nope, I was very pleasantly surprised first time reading it. And I thought it was really rewarding kind of visiting it again.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot on my first reread. I think I enjoyed it more on my second reread, just because it, like you said, Brandon, it's so dense and there's so much lore. I feel like the first time I read it, the first, I don't know, 10 chapters were kind of just a blur. And I felt like I was really picking up almost a fourth of the way into the book. Whereas on the first reread, you just pick up a lot more info. When they're giving you the info dumps at the beginning, you actually understand what they're talking about. But really, really, really great first installment. Very pumped for the second book.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. The first read, I got so caught up on like what's a tenor, what's a vesa, what are these things? Like I it took me 3 or 4 times just of reading the first chapter to understand what was happening, or the first few chapters. But on the second reread, when I kind of knew what was happening at the beginning, I loved the book on the second read through. It was a very, very good book. It was one of my most anticipated books for this year was the second one. Obviously, besides some Brandon Sanderson work coming out this year, but hey, you know, unbeatable. So overall, you know, I haven't read a book about Norse mythology before, so that was took some getting used to.
Same.
Some of the lore and gods and everything with that, but very, very happy for the second read through on this one.
Yeah, names are hard and all that.
Yeah, the glossary, I agree though, Zach, needs to be in every fantasy book ever going forward because that was very helpful.
Yeah, do you guys want to go through like some of your favorite moments?
I think my two favorite moments, one was Orca when she said that, like, I am death, I am whatever, I am vengeance, after she like decided she's going to go find Brekka. I don't know. The first time I read it, I don't think it really hit me, but the second time I was like, oh, I got like chills at that. So, and then she says it a couple more times. I loved that. And then Elvar, when she gets her first battle grim, when she's fighting the troll, she cuts off his testicles. And that was part of her battle fame was the testicles of a troll.
She's got great battle fame. Yeah, I would say my favorite part would just be when Orca just unleashes on people. She'll just go into a room of 11 guys and be like, all right, guess I'm killing everybody here. You know? So badass.
Which is so much confidence. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think my favorite parts was probably Orca in the beginning when she returns home and just seeing her house burnt down and her just kind of running around trying to find her son and then her husband dying and her just like sticking with him to the end and trying to put an axe in his hand, you know, for the afterlife. Mm-hmm. I think those are the moments that stuck out the most to me, that kind of stuck with me more than anything, was just those Orca and Thorkell moments for some reason.
Yeah.
And I did think it was really obvious that he was going to die because there was a lot of those like really sweet moments where they even talked about having more kids and all that. And I was like, oh no, this isn't going to, it's not going to end well for our guy. But that's probably the one that really stuck with me. It was just her frantically running home and finding them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole beginning, all of the beginnings of their stories were all very good. Cause I love Varg's story at the beginning too. Of like, I'm a slave, but I'm finding my own way. That whole story is always really intriguing to me in fantasy books. So I liked that stuff too, but
the beginnings and the endings were all great. If I'm going to pick any nits, it would be some of the middle would drag a little bit for me, but that's just, I still enjoyed the whole part really.
Yeah, and a lot of that was world building stuff too, like Orca's story. They'd be like rowing down the river for a whole chapter, and then like run into like a spirit in the river, and you're like, okay, well, this was unnecessary, but we learned more about the world, so I'm okay with that stuff as long as it's beneficial to the story overall.
How about quick hitters before we go? Favorite POV character for me? For me, it's gonna be Orca. Orca, I think, is my favorite.
First read through was Elvar for sure, and then second, it was hands down Orca. It wasn't even close.
Yep, Orca for me both times. I really enjoyed being in her mind and her story.
I think Varg has a lot of potential, though. I know nobody shouted him out, so I'll say I think his character has a lot of potential. He's the classic. I think he's the classic POV character for a fantasy story. You know, he's a nobody. He was a slave, and the sky's the limit for the guy. You know, you find out that he's tainted and he's powerful, and he found friends. So I think he's more of a classic character. But
yeah, he definitely killed his sister, though, right? Isn't leading towards that?
Oh wow! I haven't thought of that. I like it though.
Jarl of the hot takes.
I don't know. It just seems like it's a big point of who killed her. So it must be someone that we know, because otherwise it wouldn't hit very hard. And as far as we know, there's no one else connected to him personally, unless that's a reveal. So I feel like it would hit the hardest if A, she wasn't dead, or B, it was himself when he went through one of his rages, when he was turning into a wolf or whatever, and he just didn't remember it.
I love it.
So I don't know. That's where it seems like she either has to be alive still somehow or he killed her. Because I can't really see any other answer really like hitting me very hard, you know, any other reveal.
Yeah. But
I don't know. That's my last second hot take prediction.
I hadn't even thought about that. My only prediction was that Solich, who Jaromir was there to like capture for murder. I was like, oh, what if he murdered Freya, Vard's sister? But I don't think that's the case now that you said that. That's a good prediction.
Well, yeah, if I'm wrong, we'll edit it out.
Edit, cut that.
Yep. Yeah. And I don't really have any predictions. I have like, I think that Orca's son, Brekka, I think he's going to end up being quite sympathetic towards the Raven Feeders and the Tainted in general.
Oh, no.
I think as the story goes along. But I don't know if that's more of a prediction or just kind of like, I kind of feel like it's going to go that way. But we'll see.
That's going to destroy Orca if that happens. That's going to be rough.
Yeah. That'd be bad.
Well, it'll be tough because she's also tainted, you know? I think it's going to be a lot of us against them and where do you fall, Bloodsworn? So,
all right, last question here. If you could be any of the tainted, any of the gods tainted, I know we don't know a ton about them so far, but as of right now, which would you choose?
I mean, it's gotta be Dragonborn for me right now. I mean, they're on top. It seemed like they're the most powerful. But my sneaky pick would be the eagle. And I don't think we've met any of the eagle tainted people. But if you could fly, that'd be cool.
Do you think they'll be able to fly?
I don't know.
Swift.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I like the wolf.
It's a good one.
Maybe because we know the most about the wolf, but because can't they also? Don't they have like a better sense of like sense and tracking?
Yeah,
or am I making that up?
The Ulfers and the Hunders. They're both good at sense because at one point they're like, Varg, you'd make a great scout. And they're like, he's like, why? And they're like, yo, you'll find out later. And then you find out he's a wolf blood. So I think they both are good trackers.
Yeah, that might come in handy in this world. And you become kind of strong too.
Reminds me a lot of Perrin from Wheel of Time, this whole Hunder, Ulfer stuff. I think that would be my choice to be the Hunter, because I like the idea of being like a sneaky scout and not having to just be like a straight up warrior all the time. You can kind of be like the support.
They seem like they're the most useful practically. If you don't just want to kill somebody, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that would be probably my choice, but I would take any of them. Being a dumb, boring human sucks, so I want some powers.
Yeah.
Well, there it is. That is Shadow of the Gods. Heck yeah.
Good job, everybody.
First pod down. We will be covering Hunger of the Gods next, I believe. So stay tuned for that one. But as far as Shadow of the Gods go, that's a wrap. Thanks for listening, everyone. Again, I'm Brandon. This is Zach and Chris. We're the Knights of the Hardcover.